From the University of Alaska at College, this is Your University. The University of Alaska's Geophysical Institute and Geology Department had attempted to organize a conference of Russian and American scientists to discuss mineral resources. Geological similarities between Siberia and Alaska would make such a conference mutually productive. But the U.S. State Department felt the political climate was not favorable at this time for a cooperative program between Alaskan and Siberian scientists. Then a University of Alaska geologist received an unexpected letter from Moscow, a letter that sent him on a unique 3-week adventure and set in motion new opportunities in scientific cooperation between Russia and the United States. That geologist is with us today. He is Dr. Robert B. Forbes, head of the university's geology department and a research professor with its Geophysical Institute. Dr. Forbes, just what did that letter say?
Well, the letter invited me to participate in a conference on high temperature and high pressure synthesis of rocks and minerals, which was being held in Novosibirsk, and more specifically at a new scientific community which is called Science City. The invitation was signed by academician Korzynski, one of the top geochemists in Russian science.
Whose idea exactly was it for to have the conference itself?
This conference is apparently held in Russia every 4 years, and it's organized by the USSR Academy of Science.
I see. And did you have any connections or friends in order to be invited to the conference yourself?
Yes, this is my special field, and over the years I had met several counterpart Russian petrologists in a number of different localities, including Kamchatka and Moscow, and also in the academy. We had corresponded over the years and had become personal as well as professional friends.
What is the similarity, as far as geology is concerned, in your particular field, between the Siberian land and Alaska itself?
Well, Siberia and Alaska have much in common, including, of course, the active volcanoes, which we have in our Aleutian Archipelago in the Alaska Peninsula. This ring of fire, as it's called, continues into the USSR, into the Kuriles and Kamchatka. So, in regard to volcanoes, we have strong similarities. And then, as far as mineral resources are concerned, including gold deposits, there are many similarities between the Seward Peninsula and the mining areas in eastern Siberia.
How was your reception as an Alaskan and as an American?
The reception was extremely hospitable. I was treated very well during all of my travels, and everywhere I went, the Siberians were very interested in Alaskans, professionally and personally. They are interested in how we live, our climate, our schools, and almost all of the Siberians that I met were very interested in knowing whether or not, for example, Russian was still spoken in Alaska.
Does this anticipate any other exchanges or further conferences?
Well, we hope so. It has been our interest for some time to try to develop an exchange of information and even scientists between Siberia and Alaska. We would hope that in the very near future, conferences might be held to talk about such possibilities in more detail.
More seems to be coming then.
We hope so.
Thank you, Dr. Forbes. Our guest has been Dr. Robert B. Forbes, head of the University of Alaska Geology Department and a member of the research staff of the Geophysical Institute. This is Your University is a weekly recorded program produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUAC-FM. It has been brought to you by this station as a public service. Your announcer has been Steve Sherman. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.
From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university with your host, Steve Sherman.
In Scheibel Auditorium on the main campus of the University of Alaska, junior and senior high school musicians from throughout the state are putting finishing touches on a musical production, the Broadway gem Finian's Rainbow. Elsewhere on campus, rehearsal is in progress for an open-air concert, students are receiving private music lessons, and others are enjoying the university's recreational facilities. All are members of the 5th Annual Summer Music Camp, a camp that unites promising young musicians with the state's finest music instructors. Here with us is Charles Davis, coordinator of the camp and head of the University of Alaska's Music Department. Mr. Davis, why has the Summer Music Camp become so popular with Alaska's young musicians?
Well, I think that musical training of this sort, the opportunity for young musicians to have this type of training on a college campus, is generally recognized by all universities as beneficial to the students, and of course is a continuing program for prospective students for the universities. I don't know of any state that does not now have a summer music camp. I think that Alaska was perhaps the last to join this fold when we established ours some 5 years ago. And we had pressure from teachers in the state and also from students to establish such a camp in their state. Many of the people from Alaska were going out to such recognized camps as Interlochen and the summer music camp at Washington State University or at Western Washington University in Bellingham. It is an opportunity to pursue not only a specialized music training, for instance, for band performers. They have an opportunity not only to participate in band, but in vocal activities as well. And we try to fill the 4 weeks of musical training, which we offer, with as much and varied musical education as it is feasible. And I think that at the end they feel, of course, the closeness of the group and wish that it would continue in many respects, but it takes several weeks for them to completely digest what they have been exposed to in the 4 weeks that they're here.
I'm sure. What are some of the principal activities that you offer during the camp session?
Well, of course, our principal music activities are opportunities to participate in band, orchestra, and I wish you could hear our orchestra as it is rehearsing and performing it. I think is doing an outstanding job. And I think rather unique among all summer music camps is the fact that here we do have this opera workshop program, which is going to produce the Finian's Rainbow. We've had, I think, remarkable success in the past with the performances that we've given. And, of course, this is a part not only of the choral program, but also of the voice program, giving them a chance to participate in musical comedies. We have private instruction on their instruments or in voice and in piano as well. And in addition, we combine a good many social and recreational activities. They have an opportunity to swim in the swimming pool here on the campus, which I think all of them look forward to with a great deal of anticipation. And we climax this in the last week with a camp out at Mount McKinley National Park. This is an overnight camp out, and we travel by the Alaska Railroad for this camp out. And then the final events are a recital and concert on Thursday and Friday evenings of next week.
I know you're directing the Finian's Rainbow production. Do you see any promising musicians for possibly entering your program at the university next year?
I think that there are many outstanding musicians who will come in a year or two. I doubt that any of these do for a year or so because of the fact that we don't have any seniors in the summer music camp this summer. However, we have typically drawn several of the graduates of the summer music camp into our university program here. And I think one other interesting facet is that we select the outstanding camp musicians for the summer. And of the ones selected in the past, each one has elected to become a music major at the university level following their entry in college.
Who is part of the faculty? Who comprises the faculty?
We have Professor Miko of our own staff teaching the band and directing the band. We have Mr. Pinkerton, who is coordinator of all music at the Anchorage Public Schools, doing the strings and orchestra program. We have Professor Bio teaching piano. I am teaching voice and directing the choral and opera workshop activities. Mr. Porter, the band director at Ketchikan, is assisting with the band instruments, as is Mrs. Richards, a recent master music graduate from the University of Indiana.
It's a very important contribution to a person's education. Thank you, Mr. Davis, for being with us today. Our guest has been Charles Davis, coordinator of the Summer Music Camp and head of the University of Alaska's Music Department. I'm Steve Sherman.
This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUAC-FM. It's been brought to you by this station as a public service. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service. From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university with your host, Steve Sherman.
University of Alaska President William R. Wood recently returned to the university campus after a five-week fact-finding trip to the Far East, where he studied financing of Asian universities. His itinerary included stops in Tokyo, Seoul, Taipei, Manila, Saigon, Bangkok, and Hong Kong. He visited two or more universities in each of seven Asian countries and conferred with more than a score of representatives from other institutions of higher education. He also met with numerous high government officials, including ministers of education in various countries. Dr. Wood's trip abroad was supported by the Ford and other educational foundations. He is now evaluating his data and preparing a report for the sponsoring organizations. Here with us today is President Wood. Perhaps, Dr. Wood, before we discuss financing of Asian universities, it would be helpful if you describe some of the basic differences between Oriental and Occidental institutions.
Actually, there are far more resemblances, I think, than there are differences. For as strange as it may seem, the Asian universities are relatively new, at least those that are patterned on the modern plan of instruction and research and public service. The difference is probably basically simply that a smaller percent of the population has an opportunity to enter the university than is true in the United States. The numbers, however, are very, very great. And it is not uncommon to find universities of 20, 30, and even 40,000 students.
Are the admission standards very steep, or is this the reason for the small number of students?
Well, the admission standards are rather formal, and they are, of course, very selective. The admission is, in most countries, on the basis of a formal examination that's given at the end of the secondary school program, whatever that may be termed. And the limits are established not only for the total number of persons who may be admitted to higher education in the entire country, but specifically for each institution. It has the advantage, as far as the institution is concerned, that it knows precisely how many people it's going to have at any given term. Now, this advantage, of course, comes to the students themselves, for there are so many that have real competence that are not able to gain admissions to any institution in the country. In Japan, there's progress being made here in opening a number of junior colleges roughly comparable to our community colleges. In the Philippines and in Korea, in Thailand, the rapid strides are being made in developing technical type of programs. Sometimes these are part of established institutions, and sometimes they are established separately. But progress is being made. Astonishing progress is being made in higher education. But we must remember that there were no universities in Asia that would approach a modern use of this term. Earlier than about 1890, even private institutions, and there's some notable ones in Asia, that had their beginnings in part by encouragement from the United States and Canada and Australia and various European countries through religious groups. Even these are not hundreds of years old as we find in the European institutions and some American and even some Latin American institutions.
Basically, how are the Asian institutions financed?
Well, most of them, frankly, are financed by the government on a direct appropriation or a higher educational grants approach being used. However, there are many private ones, and they are financed as private institutions are financed around the world, but wherever they can find the money. Now, in one or two instances, I discovered that actually the student fees themselves were carrying almost the total cost of operating the institutions.
Thank you, Dr. Wood, for being with us today. Our guest has been Dr. William R. Wood, President of the University of Alaska. I'm Steve Sherman.
This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUAC-FM. It's been brought to you by this station as a public service. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service. From the University of Alaska at College, this is Your University, with your host, Steve Sherman.
25 years ago, a few enterprising individuals in Matanuska Valley attempted to establish a vegetable processing plant. Economics edged them out of business with the high cost of transportation and the lack of an export market that could be entered competitively. Today, under the aegis of the University of Alaska's Agricultural Experiment Station, another attempt is being made to operate a processing plant. The pilot program, which bears the down-to-earth designation P Project, is underway in Palmer. Although hopes are high that the P Project will prove successful over its 3-year test period and that it will prove economically feasible, the project already stands as a forward step in developmental research, the type of research necessary to support Alaska's economic growth. With us today is Dr. Horace Drury, director of the university's Agricultural Experiment Station. Dr. Drury, perhaps you can tell us how the P Project began.
It started with the realization that Alaska is not a typical agricultural state and that its experiment station would have to be prepared to undertake activities that are not normally expected of an experiment station, developmental activities. Normally, an experiment station is expected to do research and development. Is usually done by farmers and businessmen in a state which has lots of farmers and businessmen. But as our listeners know, we have very few farmers in Alaska, and they have a very severe problem in developing their own markets. For example, a pea processing plant costs several hundred thousand dollars, and in order to be economically feasible, it requires the production from several thousand acres. It's impossible to build a plant unless you know that you have the vegetables being produced, and on the other hand, you can't expect the farmers to plant all these vegetables unless they know they have a place to sell them.
Why were peas picked as the central vegetable for the project?
Well, strange as it may seem to some people, peas grow better in Alaska than they do anywhere else in the United States. This is because of our long days and our cool climate and our lack of the usual diseases of peas.
Doctor, how is the project funded?
The experiment station is contributing about $30,000 or so in services of its scientists and in labor materials. Matanuska Made Co-op is furnishing the use of its old dairy plant in Palmer for our processing line, and they are also furnishing some equipment. The Alaska Pipeline Company made a contribution of $5,000 to rent a combine, a pea combine, for a year. This is a machine that goes through the fields picking and shelling the peas automatically. The Alaska Rural Rehabilitation Corporation bought $10,000 worth of equipment, which they're letting us have for a dollar a year. Some farmers got together, a considerable number of farmers got together and put up $12,000 for expenses, which will be repaid to them out of the sales of peas. But if something should go wrong, they're willing for it to stand as a contribution.
Basically, what will the findings mean to the state of Alaska?
We hope that at the least this will result in the establishment of a multi-million dollar industry with several thousand acres of vegetables.
Thank you, Dr. Drury. Our guest has been Dr. Horace Drury, Director of the Agricultural Experiment Station of the University of Alaska. I'm Steve Sherman.
This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUAC-FM. It's been brought to you by this station as a public service. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service. From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university with your host, Steve Sherman.
The Alaska Range bends sharply to the east near Mount McKinley, and many geologists believe this bending process is still going on. This has led a University of Alaska scientist to state that the bending process may be responsible for producing earthquakes. In a recent article published in newspapers throughout the state, Dr. Edward Berg of the University of Alaska's famed Geophysical Institute explained that the outer edge of the bend is being stretched and the inner edge compressed, creating a stress that makes the Alaska Range earthquake prone. Dr. Berg, a noted seismologist, is with us today to discuss his views and describe his current seismic studies. Dr. Berg, would you elaborate on what is happening with the Alaska Range?
Yeah, let me go a little bit further back and ask first another question. Why do we have earthquakes at all? As probably you know from school times, our crust is fairly active and underlain by more warmer material, and when you go further inside the earth, it's all molten. So when this molten material moves around in the interior, you set up stress patterns on the surface. And these stress patterns are expressed by mountain ranges and other geological structures, and the Alaska Range is one of them. Now, when this material slides on top of the molten inner material, you set up stresses which cause the crust to crack up and produce the earthquakes. Alaska is one of the more favorite spots for seismologists and keeps them quite happy since it has quite a large amount of earthquakes, even compared to California. We have currently, say, a magnitude 8.5 earthquakes approximately every 10 years in Alaska, and this has happened as far back as we have good either written or instrumental records.
Is the Alaska earthquake system related to other systems on the West Coast?
Yeah, the Alaska earthquake system is kind of a hinge point between two different type of structures. One is the Aleutian arc structure, and we have not quite found out yet how these arc structures form. There are many more in the world. And the eastern part of the Pacific, which is the Cascade Range, and finally ends up in interior Alaska. And the area we are concerned with is the junction or the melting part between these two structures. In this area, we have quite a large number of earthquakes. I would say we record anywhere between 300 and 400 a month. Most of those could be felt at the surface if the area was inhabited. More specifically, they concentrate in the continuation of the Aleutian Arc, coming up the Alaskan Peninsula, going through the Cook Inlet area and reaching all the way up into the Fairbanks area. Then we have some more scattered earthquakes in other parts, but they're not so important. Over the last several months, we had a fairly high level of activity around the Iliamna and Mount Redoubt volcanoes, and a little bit less around Augustine, adjacent to the Cook Inlet sites.
Is it possible to predict earthquakes?
Well, I would say in some cases we can, and I think in some other cases seismologists have not reached any decent conclusions yet as to prediction. Now here I think we have to specify very much what kind of time range you're talking about. There are several measurements which allow us to see if the crust of the Earth undergoes stresses, and these are tilt measurements and strain measurements. And in some places they really indicate that the stress is building up in the system to such a point that we may expect a rupture.
Thank you, Dr. Berg. Our guest today has been Dr. Edward Berg of the Geophysical Institute at the University of Alaska.
This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUAC-FM. It's been brought to you by this station as a public service. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service. From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university with your host, Steve Sherman.
In a state noted for its diverse and spectacular geography, it seems appropriate the University of Alaska should offer a complete geography program to students. This fall, for the first time, the geography program will exist as a separate department. Formerly, it was taught as part of the anthropology and geography department. A growing student enrollment necessitated the reorganization that resulted in establishment of the program. Joining the ranks of university department heads is Dr. Herbert Roshi, newly appointed head of the geography department and our guest today. Dr. Roshi, I would imagine that Alaskan geography would be one of your most interesting courses. Have you found it popular with students?
Yes. This is not a required course, but there is a steady demand for it, and so it is offered every year. Many summer session students take the course, and many of them come from other states. As you know, we have excellent library resources here for this course, and we can do a great deal with topographic maps of the state. Then, too, we have a lot of well-planned color sound films, all of which make it possible to present the state in its many aspects very interestingly. Then, too, the course ties in with anthropology and history courses dealing with Alaska specifically. I would point out also that we talk quite a bit about Alaska in other courses whenever it is appropriate to do so.
Are you offering any new courses this fall?
We are starting out a course on regional geography of Asia, except USSR. We have a separate course on the This course is open to upperclassmen and specially qualified sophomores and freshmen. We think this is a desirable course to institute at this time because of the great importance of Asia in world affairs generally, and also because of Alaska's increasing ties with Japan and other Asiatic countries. Next semester, we shall offer a new course in economic geography. This will be of special interest, we feel, to those concerned with resource use and economic development.
Doctor, are you attempting to develop any kind of interdisciplinary programs?
Well, these were already fostered actively by my predecessor, Professor Morris Morgan. And such programs will certainly continue, both in research and in teaching. Last fall, for example, the university had a very successful evening seminar on the Pleistocene or Ice Age. Six departments, including geography, participated in this. Geography, of course, is a broad discipline, and our geography majors must take quite a number of courses in related fields. Because geography deals with both the natural and cultural characteristics of the various regions of the world, it serves as a bridge between the natural and social sciences, and so it is understandable that we do have a strong interest in interdisciplinary programs.
I see. Perhaps you could tell us something about your background and how you came to join the university faculty.
Well, I began as a geography instructor in public school and college teaching in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. During my active military service from 1941 until retirement in 1962, I was assigned most of the time to geographic intelligence and environmental research. In 1964, after retirement, I came to Alaska as a civilian geographer with the Army Arctic Test Center. Last year, the university invited me to join the faculty and to carry on the developmental program for geography. And here I am.
Very good. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you. Our guest today has been Dr. Herbert Rashi, head of the Geography Department of the University of Alaska. I'm Steve Sherman.
This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUAC-FM. It's been brought to you by this station as a public service. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.